Coming up on show 932, the UK government just brought forward their petrol and diesel ban to 2030. Stick around, I've got the details. Plus on the podcast today, what it means for you, how the UK becomes the first major car market to bring forward a ban so soon, the massive investment they've announced for charging and incentives, and how the UK compares to the rest of the world. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to EV News Daily for Wednesday, the 18th of November. My name is Martin Lee. I go through every EV story to save your time, so you don't have to do that. And normally it's a whole mix of stories, but today talking about this huge news coming out of the UK of the 2030 new car petrol and diesel ban, 10 years earlier than previously announced. And it was part of a 10-point plan announced by our Prime Minister in the middle of the night. Boris Johnson is calling this the Green Industrial Revolution, as wind power and nuclear and hydrogen and carbon capture and storage all got promoted today, part of our legally binding goal to hit emissions targets. Well, £1.3 billion worth of cash will be injected into new car charging infrastructure, and £580 million will be used for EV grants to encourage buyers into new models. No mention of incentivising the used car market, like is happening in some countries. However, one point to note is that hybrids will still be allowed until 2035 if they travel a significant range on electric. What is that range? Not announced today. It's a bold move that'll give the car market a clear sense of direction. It allows for investment in skills training from auto technicians to emergency responders, for fleet buyers to start running cost analysis, for towns and cities to press on with plans for their own zero emission zones to clear up the air around our kids' schools, for charging companies to justify the extra investment needed from their investors. So here is the plan then. Let's work our way through it on the podcast today. A government saying backing our world-leading car manufacturing bases, including in the West Midlands, North East and North Wales, to accelerate the transition to electric vehicles and transforming our national infrastructure to better support electric vehicles. Well, you'll be not surprised to hear a government talking in those kind of terms about their world-leading manufacturing. All governments do that, and I'm obviously proud of Nissan making the Leaf, for instance, in Sunderland in the northeast. The Jaguar I-Pace is a great car. Not made here, though. The Austrians make that for us. There is very little EV industry to talk about, and in this plan announced today, I don't see anything that is going to stimulate some kind of world-leading EV industry to the UK. As we become a small island off of Europe, I don't see how we can beat China, the US and the European investment that's happening. But still, government announcements have to talk in these terms, a lot of hyperbole, and in this case, a lot of divorcing from reality. Government say today, and I quote, following extensive consultation with car manufacturers and sellers, the Prime Minister has confirmed that the UK will end the sale of new petrol and diesel cars and vans by 2030, 10 years earlier than planned. However, we will allow the sale of hybrid cars and vans that can drive a significant distance with no carbon coming out of the tailpipe until 2035, end quote. So that to me spells the end of so-called self-charging hybrids, because they don't go very far at all on electric power. Spells the end of series or serial hybrids. Those cars that have an engine that work as a range extender, like the Nissan technology, which they're about to start promoting really heavily in Europe and here as well, with the Qashqai going that way. Because the car doesn't work without the engine running. Very small battery, and in order for it to move, you have to put petrol in it. You got to put fuel in the thing. So it's going to have a carbon-emitting engine. So that spells the end of those. They're going to get a maximum 8 or 9 years out of those cars. Is it enough for car makers? Maybe for some, maybe not for others, but it's good. It's clarity, but the whole hybrid thing is still a little bit shades of grey at the moment. Governments say, and I quote, the UK car industry already manufactures a significant proportion of electric vehicles in Europe, including one of the most popular models in the world. Yeah, that'll be talking about the Leaf in Sunderland then. They say that to support the acceleration, the Prime Minister will invest, or is announcing an investment, of £1.3 billion to accelerate the rollout of charge points for EVs in homes, streets and motorways across England, so people can more easily and conveniently charge their car. We'll come on to plans here for Scotland have got a different date, but these are the English plans. £582 million worth of grants for those buying zero and ultra-low emission vehicles to make them cheaper to buy and incentivise more people to make the transition. £500 million of investment to spend in the next 4 years to develop and mass-scale production of EV batteries as part of our commitment to provide up to £1 billion boosting international investment in our strong manufacturing bases. And again, governments say this will help protect and create thousands of new jobs in the Midlands, North East and North Wales. And again, I'll point out here, it's the government's job to talk about things like manufacturing and all of those things. But look, £500 million over 4 years. So if it was split equally, £125 million a year, whilst that is a lot of money, and I wouldn't say no to somebody giving me that money, it is a drop in the ocean when you look at what is being spent elsewhere. If this money can go to cottage industries, to niche applications, to some of the really high-tech R&D that we've got going on with organisations and universities, then maybe we can make a difference. It's possible, but £125 million a year is just peanuts in the grand scheme of how much money is being spent in the transition to EVs. On the podcast earlier this week, I told you how Volkswagen are increasing their investment to 80 billion plus euros over the next period of time to 2025. Let's move on. We will also launch a consultation, they say, on the phase out of new diesel HGVs to put the UK in the vanguard of zero emissions freight. No date has been set. So how does the UK compare to around the world then? Well, California have set the aim of banning fossil cars and trucks by 2035. And yes, whilst that was an executive order, it's still intent. Norway, they already have around 75% of new vehicles with a plug socket on every single month being sold. Almost half of all new cars sold in Norway, fully electric in the first half of this year. And this, look, Norway is a country built on, what's that? Oh yeah, oil and gas revenues. And this is their plan. They have a more ambitious target than the rest of the world. 2025 is the date set, not in law, but a parliamentary goal in Norway for zero emissions cars, light vehicles and urban buses. Some German cities have already banned old diesels. In China, they want half of all new car sales to be what China calls NEVs, new energy vehicles, by 2035. India is currently consulting with their domestic vehicle makers on a 2030 ban. That's incredible. That's India. Scotland was previously 2032 before today's announcement. We'll see if they change that to come in line with the PM's ambitions. I wonder whether politically they'll knock a couple of years off of that just to say that Scotland is ahead of England. Sweden, Denmark, Netherlands and Ireland, all 2030. In France and Spain, currently 2040. But look, as countries like the UK make these promises, we will be watched very closely to see if green policies are vote winners or vote losers. Sorry for being cynical, but you'll notice that I've said nothing here about Eastern Europe, Russia, Africa, South America, Australia, any kind of US policy which aligns all 50 states. So there's lots of work to be done. And why is this policy so important? Why is ambition around policy important with EVs? Because there are places in the world it's already been achieved when policymakers get their head screwed on. Shenzhen in southern China has the largest electric fleet of buses and taxis in the world. I often report on this podcast about stories of so-and-so city ordered 10 new electric buses. Shenzhen has over 15,000 electric buses. They started lawmaking in 2008. The roads were filled with them from 2010. All to improve air quality. And in Shenzhen, if you want to buy a petrol car, if you're a resident, you want to buy a petrol car, you have to enter the government lottery or like an auction. But if you want to go buy an EV, you can buy that anytime. Money and technology followed policy in Shenzhen, which was started 13 years ago. This is not new. The media today has been largely breathless and bonkers, I would say. Sounds like a romantic comedy coming out of Hollywood. Breathless and bonkers. But that's largely been the reaction today, as different newspapers, I mean, newspapers are irrelevant these days, nobody buys a newspaper, but largely media organisations with their own ideology or, you know, political slant have been, you know, leaning one way or the other. But it's not uncommon to see headlines today of a lot of these news organisations, remember who they're owned by, really criticising electric vehicles. That's what we need to think for ourselves and do the analysis ourselves and work out, would it be the right thing for you? Well, Boris Johnson wrote, he's our Prime Minister, he wrote today in the Financial Times, and I quote, "We'll invest more than $2.8 billion in electric vehicles, lacing the land with charging points and creating long-lasting batteries in UK gigafactories, wiffle, bibble, bubble. This will allow for us to end the sale of new petrol and diesel cars and vans in 2030. However, we will allow the sale of hybrid cars and vans that can drive a significant distance with no carbon coming out of them until 2035, wiffle waffle. On Wednesday, I will meet UK businesses to discuss their contribution. We plan to provide clear timetables for the clean energy we will procure, details of the regulations we will change, and the carbon prices that we will put on emissions." End quote. That's our PM, Boris, the self-isolating Prime Minister who had COVID earlier this year and is currently in quarantine once again. So plenty of time to write for things like the newspapers. So what can we do to help people get into an EV? Well, the US has things like the federal tax rebate or the tax break for manufacturers who haven't yet sold 200,000 vehicles. So buy one of their EVs. If you're buying the new VW ID4 in the US and you qualify for the federal tax credit, that's money that you don't have to pay next year on your tax bill, something which many say is unfairly hindering the early adopters who took the risks, hit the quota limit, the likes of Tesla and GM, and now the others are coming in and they're getting that benefit. So that may change under a Biden administration. His plan is to boost domestic EV production. Domestic EV makers, the likes of the American car makers and the startups like the Rivians and Lucids, a made in America rebate, if you like. In France, you can get up to €12,000 off a new EV if you are scrapping your old combustion car. So what would make you buy an EV? Is it the carrots or the stick? Or maybe it's both? Well, for fleets, it's total cost of ownership. And so many of them are more ahead of the curve than the general public on this. Fleet buyers can see that when you factor in cheaper electricity, you save money with EVs. Large fleets will take a long time to change over, but many will do it in step with adding chargers at depots or wherever their vehicles are kept, often overnight. Looking around the grounds today and having a look at who had a comment on this, we'll start with the journalists. Jim Holder is the editorial director of Haymarket Automotive, in charge of a lot of automotive publications, magazines, websites, things like that, said this. "So, new EVs and plug-in hybrids only from 2030, just EVs from 2035. Nothing to fear from the ambition, plenty of challenges in the execution, huge hurdles ahead, but those that should know say it's entirely doable with the right investment and mindset. Can we be world-leading? Why not?" says Jim. Johnny Smith, who goes by the name of Car Pervert on Twitter, says, "New piston cars banned in the UK from 2030. As I said before, the key word here is new. EV charging is improving every quarter as car ranges improve. Interesting petrol cars will survive for occasional amusement. EVs do bulk of miles. I'm cool with that," says Johnny. Yeah, a really important point that Johnny Smith raises there, that ranges are getting more, so cars are going further, but also they're charging faster. So we look at, you know, new EVs typically charging at 100, 125, 150. Fancy what getting yourself a, you know, a Porsche or a Lucid, 300 kilowatts plus minus. But also the new Tesla cells that we've talked about recently, they didn't really talk about charging speed on battery day, but we know that a key part of that is the C rate. So the energy that you can get into a cell safely and quickly is improving all the time. And that, not only do we need, as I've heard lots of debate today from people saying, this is nice that you're going to ban petrol and diesel cars, we need more infrastructure. And yes, they're not wrong. But a key part of infrastructure is not just more, but how it's used. So as cars charge quicker, so more cars per hour can use the installed infrastructure. And so, yes, we always need more, and we always want more. But as cars are now charging, this isn't 10 years ago. It's not taking 3 hours to charge a car. It's 10 or 15 minute top-ups when you're doing a road trip, if you're charging quickly. And more cars, meaning more efficient use of infrastructure, should mean that the really expensive stuff to put in, the high-powered chargers, not I'm talking about not destination chargers, not home chargers, but the really expensive grid connections, the 350-kilowatt chargers that use the 800-volt cars on the market now, that is expensive to put in, but it can be more efficiently used. Autocar website said, so far, individual manufacturers have been mainly mute on the changes and their effects, although their collective body, the SMMT, called them extremely concerning while issuing a broad welcome. BMW has given voice, noting that the UK is only one of 140 markets and the UK is somewhat of a lone voice, but it expects to be well able to supply the UK compliant cars when the law changes. Well, BMW, I'd say to you, yes, we are only one of 140 markets. We're a reasonably big one. And also, there's an effect here, like a follow-the-leader effect. But I will come on to that in a moment. Think about the work that CARB in California have done with emissions. You see, car makers, there's no point in making a car that is compliant in California, but not the rest of the world. So when these big markets like Europe, California, China make policy change, it's just more convenient for car makers to make a car that they can sell around the world, largely. So yeah, talking of the SMMT, Mike Hawes is the chief exec of the lobby group that is the many car makers put their funds into this. And interestingly, not Tesla, they used to be, but they pulled out. They fund this organization, and it's his job to speak on their behalf. I mean, look, that is the point of a trade association, right? Sometimes to say the things that car makers don't want to say directly themselves, well, the car makers group told the BBC this.
The challenge to the industry is absolutely massive. We've been an industry built on petrol diesel engines for over a century. Shifting that with all the embedded investment to a brand new technology in the space of what is a few years is an incredible challenge.
It's a challenge for his members who are the car makers. Oh, boo-hoo! Oh, are people dying from lung cancer too much because it's a challenge? So it's a challenge for the health providers as well to sort out all the problems that the current fossil cars are creating. So get on with it, son, and wind your neck in. Oh, and by the way, it's not, I quote, a few years to transition. It's 9 years away, and your members have been working on this reluctantly for a lot longer as well. So they should be better prepared. Who to blame? Only yourselves. Get on with it. Right, let's talk about what Andy Eastlake said. He's the managing director of the Low Carbon Vehicle Partnership. He said, it's clear and ambitious, but we believe necessary and achievable if we work in partnership. Keith Johnston, former guest on this show, he's the co-founder of the green tech biz Urban Electric. They make the retractable on-street charging hubs, the one that pop up out of the pavement. They're brilliant. He said this, as we scale up for the 2030 ban, we need on-street fast charging infrastructure that reduces the streetscape impact of charge points, maintaining accessibility for pavement for pedestrians. Not surprised that's his business, that actually makes these incredible pop-up chargers that are there when you need them and then go down when you don't, which is good for street infrastructure. And it's such a great idea that hopefully some of this investment money can go to projects, undoubtedly, or to projects like this, that solve the problem for about a third of the country that don't have anywhere to charge overnight on private property. Chris Stark is the chief executive of the UK's Climate Change Committee and said this, the 2030 commitment to phase out sales of petrol and diesel cars and vans is massive. It's a transport commitment, a consumer commitment, an industry commitment, and crucially, it'll drive fundamental change in the whole energy system. So, its impact can't be overstated. The Electric Vehicle Association of Scotland said the move towards electric transportation can play its part, and that should include phasing out the sale of new petrol and diesel cars by 2025. So I told you earlier that Scotland sometimes likes to do their own thing, go their own way. in many possible ways. But there you go. I just think we're in many ways weaker when we're apart. But Scotland kind of saying, hey, let's do 2025. I like that. I like you, Scotland. Let's be ambitious. Adam Vaughan is the chief reporter of the News Scientist magazine, said on petrol and diesel ban, there is a big concession to the motoring industry. Government is allowing new plug-in hybrid electric vehicles to be sold until 2035, judging from the language, like Mitsubishi Outlanders being okay, but mild hybrids, the Prius, not anymore. Some of the madness of the media coverage today, like this. Let me read you the headline of one Birmingham newspaper. The law on having a petrol or diesel car is set to change. No. Firstly, today it didn't become law. Secondly, no, nobody is going to stop you having a petrol or diesel car. That's not going to be, that's not a thing. It's 100% wrong. It's misinformation. I'm not saying it's disinformation, which is a, that would be more accusatory of me. And that's a darker thing as well. That is putting out wrong information for a darker purpose. But it's misinformation. It's just not understanding what was said. No one's going to stop you owning a petrol car in 2030. You just can't buy a brand new one. So, what do you reckon then? That is our look at the big news today. In conclusion, it's unquestionably a good thing. The devil is in the detail. What do they mean by allowing hybrids going a significant distance? Well, is that 10 miles or is it 100 miles? I would say it's 100 miles, more like. And, you know, by the next 9 years, a plug-in hybrid doing 100 miles, well, it won't be uncommon. And here's the key thing. It's only for new vehicles, like Johnny Smith said. And, heck, it's 9 years away. Electric vehicles are more Silicon Valley than Detroit. It's hard for us. It's part of human nature to comprehend the pace of innovation. It's been proven that we either tend to massively underestimate or massively overestimate innovation. I mean, look, it's 2020, and I'm still waiting for my hoverboard. And yet the phone I carry around with me is the stuff of science fiction. So what phone were you using 9 years ago? Let's go back nine rather than forward nine. Well, 9 years ago, you were using the iPhone 3G. It had a thing called apps. You could download them from the newly launched App Store. Remember, first iPhone didn't have apps. You were using the BlackBerry Bold. Google launched their Nexus One. Nokia launched their Symbian-powered N8. Kids saying, what's a Nokia? So we know from VW's plans to sell 20 million EVs a year by 2030, from China's aggressive EV industry, from Tesla's plan to be their own cell maker, which allows for cars with a range of 500, 600, 700 miles. And that, for Tesla, is by 2025. That's 5 years short of what we're talking about. After that, it'll just be normal. Battery costs have almost come down unbelievably over the last 10 years, from $1,000 per kilowatt hour to $100 per kilowatt hour. And the battery is the most important, expensive part of an EV. EVs are getting cheaper to buy than combustion cars. When you factor in running costs and lack of servicing over your typical ownership period, an EV is now cheaper. Studies have proven it. Soon, they'll be cheaper to buy at the point of purchase. At that point, look, when EVs become cheaper on the ticket, let alone running costs, you don't need national governments or state governments to be involved because economics takes over. The pound in your pocket, the dollar in your wallet, that is stronger than anything. We'll always operate in our own self-interest. Selfishly, sometimes, but we do. EVs are not only better in every way, but if the trend of the last 10 years continues, then within the next 1 to 2 years, they'll be cheaper to buy. And finally, you know, I'll conclude with this point. Isn't it about perception? Like, I'm interested in this topic, and so are you, because you've got all the way to the end. But most people have a busy life. They'll read the headlines and nothing more. They'll see petrol cars banned. And that will impact buying decisions. It will impact residual prices, not in 2030, but now. Who's buying a diesel car today when they're going to be worth nothing tomorrow? Look, that's not reality. I'm exaggerating, but it's perception. So what do you think? Leave me a comment on the YouTube show or email me hello@evnewsdaily.com. And that's your show for today. Well, if you know someone who, after the news today, is interested in electric vehicles, then by all means, please share this show with them. I'd really appreciate if you could pass this on to, you know, one person or, you know, 100 or more. Whether you can share it with a family, friend, or on your social media, there are 931 previous shows in the archive, and there's plenty to learn from, as I've learned over the years, and long-time listeners learning with me as well. The blog is evnewsdaily.com. If you subscribe, you get the new podcasts every day without having to do anything. And thank you, as always, to the companies and the individuals that fund this podcast to make it happen. That is Phil Roberts of Electric Future, Brad Crosby, Avid Technology, Porsche of The Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East, NationalCarCharging.com and AlohaCharge.com, Derek Riley of the EV Review Ireland YouTube channel, and Richard at rsimons.co.uk. It's rsymons.co.uk. The electric vehicle specialists have a wonderful day. I'll catch you tomorrow. And remember, from 2030, there really will be no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.